Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Cryptic Commander. We are your hosts. I'm John Nosey.
This is Onique.
And man, it's been a minute, you know, since we put out an episode.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks.
There's so much we got to go over. Plus, there's a lot of excitement for the new sets that are coming out. But I'm getting ahead of myself here. We're going to start this week off with Card of the Week, like we always do. Onique, you've got Card of the Week.
Pro Tour All-Star Vein Ripper. 3BBB. This is a mythic rare from Murders at Karlov Manor. I keep misreading the name. Murders of Karlov Manor. Manor, whatever. Murders at Karlov Manor. MKM. 3BBB for a creature vampire assassin. The vampire is crucial. It's a 6/5 flying ward, sacrifice a creature, and then whenever a creature dies, so any creature, target opponent loses 2 life and you gain 2 life. This was the breakout all-star deck and card for Pro Tour Chicago for Pioneer. This was a meta killer, and it quite literally did exactly that. It was represented pretty well. Team Channel Fireball pretty much brought out this deck to kill Is It Phoenix, to kill Rakdos Vampires, debuted in Pro Tour Chicago to kill Is It Phoenix, Azorius Control, Lotus Field combo, especially Amalio combo, pretty much all of it, and it did exactly that. It got first place, and yeah, this deck is pretty disgusting. Have you seen this in action? Did you watch it at the Pro Tour by any chance?
No, I haven't. I just heard from the grapevine what happened.
Seth Manfield took the whole thing down.
I did hear that because he's from St. Louis. You know.
Okay. Yeah, I think in the top 8, it was 2 Rakdos Vampires, 2 Lotus Field combos, 2 Is It Phoenix, 1 Amalia combo, and then 1 Boros Heroic. So it was pretty diverse. I mean, 2-2-2 doesn't sound that diverse, but I guess if it's 5 different decks and a deck kind of out of nowhere came up and took the whole thing down, yeah, like, it's not Rakdos mid-range, because that's a different archetype. It was Rakdos Vampires, which was only represented by 11 decks out of the, 260 players or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, as soon as Rakdos Vampires won the whole thing, even he didn't even have to win. Just Vein Ripper went up from close to bulk mythic to spiked $30. I mean, it's settled a little bit to 20 now, but I mean, this card is basically a staple now in any vampire based deck. Of course, that you're running Sorin as well, the one who could cheat out vampires. I mean, if you're thinking about getting this card, it's probably a little bit too late now, but if you want to compete in Pioneer, then you need to figure out a plan to play against it.
Hopefully, I love this card for Standard. You know, whenever a creature dies, target opponent loses 2 life, you gain 2 life. That blends well with Sheldred. And then you got the ward, sacrifice a creature. Number one, if the ward is like pay mana, that hurts me in blue, right? But if it's something like discard a card or sacrifice a creature, that doesn't hurt me too much in blue unless I'm light on the cards in my hand or creatures. But this guy's also got evasion, that flying. To me, this guy's a no-brainer if you're going heavy black, you know, or even just Rakdos and Standard. And I know that this ain't the only format this card's being seen playing, too.
The nutty thing is that, like, even if you try to, you know, play spot removal, like, let's just, you know, simple murder or whatever, like, you have to pay the ward cost, which is sacrifice a creature. So if you don't have a creature, you can't destroy it, which when you do pay the sacrifice a creature, it triggers Vein Ripper, and then when Vein Ripper dies itself, then it triggers again. So now you've spent 1 removal card, you've lost a creature, and you've got drained for 4 life. That, I mean, I'm not saying that 6 mana worth there, but it's, I would definitely say it's worthy of just the card itself. You know, you're already gaining an advantage, which is just for your opponent having to deal with it. Let alone just turn it sideways and hit you for 6 damage. And as you said, flying, it's easy to just go over everything. It could block Phoenix. That was a big thing too. If they get out Arc like Phoenix and start swinging, you could just block in the air, like, really, really well.
All right, guys, this next segment is called Movers and Shakers. It is powered by mtgstocks.com. And, you know, I like to cheat sometimes and look at the, you know, the movers and shakers before we put it on the show. And I'll start through top through bottom, which I normally do bottom through top, right? And I'm like, man, I don't recognize some of these cards, or they're probably from other sets I don't play with or formats I don't play with. But I'm like, oh, and then it got to one card I know, and then it got to another card. I'm like, oh, there it goes. You know, so the closer I got toward the bottom, it's like, oh, I know these cards. So starting us off this week with some cheap pickups. Ensnaring Bridge, $11.41, slowly moving down.
I really like this card. This was originally in Stronghold way back in the day. And I had a very simple... I read in, I think, Scry, Inquest, Duelist, whatever it was, one of those. Like a very simple combo with it, which was this card and Grafted Skullcap.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a rare from Urza Saga, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Grafted Skullcap is like, during your upkeep or during your draw phase, draw a second card. And then at the end of your turn, discard your hand. So when you discard your hand, Ensnaring Bridge is basically fully online that creatures cannot attack you because you have no cards in your hand. So it was pretty, like, the combo felt offensive because you're doubling up on cards, and it felt really defensive because your opponent can't attack.
I'm looking at a double Masters version of this one right here. It's a card I bring up a lot, believe it or not, Onika, because I play the modern format. And this card right here, Vengevine, $4.49. It's stabilizing. And I mention this because I don't see a lot of people playing Vengevine in modern. You know, you got a lot of other stuff out there, I know. And with new sets too, it's kind of pushing ideas and power level and stuff. But this guy right here, man, this is a good cheap pickup. What's it stabilizing at? About $4, $4.50?
Yeah, $4.50. This is something I actually hope comes on Arena at some point, because this is also a favorite of mine.
It's a classic. It's a classic. Another one right here is Contest of Claws. Now, it's one I don't remember. $3.15. It's moving up.
It's from a Lost Cameras at Ixalan Commander.
Ah. But number three this week, it's one I do remember. Counterbalance, $17 even. It's up 35%. I love the little note show notes right here. The Aryan, however you pronounce his name.
Aryan.
Yeah, sit down and listen, kids, because Grandpa's got a story for you.
Yeah, this is a card that I usually bring up as an example, because a lot of people say that cards with split second can't be countered, which is wrong. And Counterbalance is the example that I usually provide of saying, yes, Counterbalance can counter it. Because there are days when you had Counterbalance and Sensei's Divining Top, where you just look at a top three, you know, your opponent casts a spell, then you top in response, see if the top three has a same mana value, and then put the one on top, and then when Counterbalance resolves, you reveal the top card of your library, and then counter it if it matches. So, I think it's called Countertop, actually, now that I think about it. What are the decks just called Countertop? Oh, it says right here in the
I think it was box. Called Miracles, wasn't it?
Miracles was a different deck that also abused top.
Okay. I loved Miracles.
I'm sure there was some overlap.
Sure.
But, yeah, I didn't
even realize. When it comes to Legacy and stuff in Eternal formats, you know, it's just the cards I gotta have and I always play with, so. And, but number two this week, number two, Arwen, Weaver of Hope, $10.71. It's up 68%.
Yeah, I got nothing to say because that's Lord of the Rings.
Number one. Number one. And this one right here is from what? What says this from?
Crimson Vow.
Wow. Path of Peril, $7.24. It's up 116%.
Yeah, same thing with Vein Ripper, just because of the results of the Pioneer event. This card was one of the key sideboard pieces in dealing with all the aggro decks. Because it destroys all creatures. Like, it's very common to see one black-black for all creatures get -2/-2 until end of turn. Like, we see that all the time in Uncommon. That's fine, but if you have, like, a 3-3, for example, because it has, like, an aura on it, or a combat trick, or some count plus and plus encounters, you're not killing a creature. This destroys all creatures with mana value 2 or less, clean. Doesn't matter how big it is or what it is. It has the extra bonus of the cleave part, which if you pay like a lot more mana,
which is still viable standard, yeah.
Yeah, so if you pay double the mana, essentially, then you're destroying all creatures outright, which is a wrath effect. Granted, it's 6 mana wrath that doesn't have any extra stuff on there, which you're just going to play Sunfall or No Witnesses or... I forget the other, not Farewell, but by invitation only. I forget what it was, but there's so many wraths. But this is a black wrath. But you're not really casting this card for 6 mana unless you really, really need to. But I don't even think decks that ran this one had white in it, at least not in Pioneer. But as you said, in Standard, there's a Boros deck running around that this is a clean answer to. So... I think Esper runs a few copies of these to keep the aggro decks in check.
All right, and that's your movers and shakers this week.
So on March 11th, we had a planned or scheduled banner restricted announcement. The next one is coming up, just a heads up, is going to be on May 13th. So that's the next wave of bans or whatever. But this time, we actually did have some action going on, and it was genuinely a banned and restricted announcement, or I guess you could say unrestricted announcement. In Vintage, Ponder is unrestricted. I think initially this links to those Ponder is unbanned. Ponder was never banned in Vintage, because Vintage, you could just basically everything goes, except for, you know, some copies just had, some cards were just a single copy of each. Ponder is from one copy now to 4. But the big one, my opinion, the one that almost everyone knew about, or at least forecasted, Violent Outburst is banned in Modern. Good freaking riddance. That card, I just didn't like the play patterns of the card. The card itself was seen heavily... I mean, you know... Well, yeah, you know this, John. You've seen decks that ran Violent Outburst, I'm sure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, in Team of Rhinos, in I don't know how many color decks that ran Living End.
Yeah, amazing. He's amazing.
Yeah, like it's the card text is practically irrelevant, but just because, in case you don't know it, I'm going to read it anyway. So it's 3 mana, 1 red, green. Instant, which is crucial. Instant, creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn. No one cares about that. The only thing that you care about is the instant 3 mana cascade. As you've probably seen before with Cascade, and now even recently with Discover cards, you're building your deck in a specific way to where when you discover, or in this case, when you cascade, you will always find a specific card. Just by itself on the surface, like cascade and discover, I'll just stick with cascade. You're playing with the element of surprise. Like if you just built a normal semi-random deck, maybe a draft deck or whatever, you know, you'll have some 1-drops and 2-drops in the deck. So when you flip over some cards, when you, you know, exile until you reveal a card that matches the criteria, it's a surprise. Oh, you can have like a little 2/3 creature with, you know, it costs 2 mana. Cool. Or you have like a 1-drop lightning bolt or something. Whatever. But these decks specifically got cascading footfalls. No, not cascading. What's the what's this dumb thing called?
Storm, like it's cascade.
It's not cascading. I mean, might as well be cascading footfalls. Oh my god, crashing footfalls. Crashing Footfalls. That's the Rhino card. It's either Crashing Footfalls or Living End. But Crashing Footfalls is a bigger culprit. So I'm just going to call it Rhinos because that's what everyone calls it. It's a card that has no mana cost, and the only way you can cast it is if you suspend it. But if you have a way to cast without paying his mana cost, which is what Cascade allows you to do, you cast it just, here you go, as a free spell. So how this deck played out is that once you have three mana available, John, at the end of your turn, I'm going to cast Violent Outburst as an instant. I don't care about my creatures getting +1/+0 because I probably don't have any. All I care about is that I'm going to instant speed cast Violent Outburst, which will automatically flip into the Rhinos. So I'm going to get 2/4/4 creatures with trample. You end your turn, my turn, I have eight power worth of creatures, and I'm just going to swing at you sideways on my third turn.
Right. That's crazy.
And I can leave up a Force of Negation, because Force of Negation is a counter spell that, like, if it's not your turn, you can exile something to counter target non-creature, whatever.
You're thinking of Pact of Negation, right?
No, Force of Negation.
I just got a Force.
Force of Negation says, if it's not your turn, you may exile a blue card from your hand rather than paying its mana cost. Mm-hmm. Counter target non-creature spell. If the spell is countered the way, exile it. So
it does say that, yeah. I just bought one.
Yeah, so if I'm gonna cast Violent Outburst and you're gonna try to counter the Cascade portion of the spell, like if you're gonna try to counterspell Rhinos, I'm just gonna cast Force of Negation because it's not my turn and I can cast it for free, you know, or exile what the alternate costs.
If it's not your turn, wow, you're so right. Okay, I don't remember that part of it. Okay. Yep, I'm looking at my copy right now.
Yeah, so like, this spell is basically going to resolve. So, Violent Outburst is banned because of the instant part. You still have Shardless Agent, which that deck plays as well, which is another 3-mana Cascade spell. And now you have to kind of turn to Ardent Plea, which is a white-blue enchantment that also costs 3 mana to Cascade. And just like some other Rakdos color 3-mana sorcery, like target creature can't block, but you don't care, that also has Cascade. But these are sorceries and enchantments, so you can only cast them on your turn. Meaning, A, it drastically reduces the explosiveness of the deck, and you can't hold up Force of Negation for free, basically, because like if you want a counterspell, you actually need to invest a little bit of mana.
Sure.
So, good riddance, Team Rhinos. The deck is now going to try to adopt it, like I said, Ardent Plea, because the other one, it needs to target a creature that can't block, which that's going to be much, much tougher to go off of. Ardent Plea, I think it just has Exalted. So when a creature attacks solo, it gets +1/+0 or whatever it is. Like, I don't know. That deck doesn't care about the text on the card. All it cares about is the Cascade for 3 to go find something that's 2 or less. But that's gone now. Like, actually, well, no. I'm not going to say that it's gone. The deck will still be playable, but we don't know how strong it is. Like, we know Modern has Special Lands, has Triomes, has Shock Lands, and now has the Surveil Lands. Like, the mana base, you can play 4 or 5 colors trivially. Like, it's easy. So they just need to adjust their mana base and find ways to protect the Cascade thing. But I do think this is a massive blow to the strength of the deck.
I agree.
Same thing with Living End decks, because those decks just had tons of cards that cycle for 1 mana. You know the Lord of the Rings called card, like Lorien Revealed or Unveiled or whatever it's called?
Not really.
It's like a 6-mana draw 3, but it's cycling or has island cycling for 1 mana. Do you know that one?
No, not really.
It's a cycle of commons. There's one of each that has like mountain cycling, and it has swamp cycling. There's like, so Living End casts cards, or I guess cycled cards, like the common card Oliphant. It's just a creature elephant. It's a 6 mana, 6/4 trample. When it attacks, something else gets +2/+1 on trample. Whatever, we don't care. We're mountain cycling that card. So pay one, discard it, search your library for a mountain card, which could be a Triome, put it in your hand and shuffle. Then you just play a land for turn or whatever you want to do. But it's putting these big fat creatures into the graveyard to cast Living End. To once again cycle, to cascade into Living End, which is another one of those free suspend cards, to basically reanimate the entire graveyard. That deck also ran Violent Outburst. So that deck is also going to take a pretty big blow. So maybe that also will adopt Ardent Plea. Like right now, it's going to be interesting to see Modern shift. Since it doesn't kill the deck outright, it's still playable, but we don't know how good it is. And maybe it's just not worth playing anymore. So in that sense, it would kill it outright. But I think everyone's going to try to figure out what to do to go around it. Which I guess leaves the number three deck in the format, which would be Golgari Ogmoth. Didn't you say you had good matchups up against it, or was it the other way around? That was a bad matchup for you.
Ogmoth I could take really easily.
Okay. What deck were you running again? I forget.
Running my mono blue mill.
Okay, yeah. So then if your mill deck is still at the top, then you just might be at the top of the meta at the moment.
I am pretty much. So the thing is Yawgmoth, I can take it down. You know, a few of the other decks too, I can take down. It's just now that we got out of Modern season, we've been pushing Standard like crazy up in the store. Mm-hmm. So Modern hasn't been firing, and we've had the designated day of Monday, and it still isn't even firing. But when we had the RCQs, it was pretty heavy, and then people were coming in, but then it just died out again, you know. Modern player at heart, man. And it's hard to play test with people because the best I can do right now is go play Historic, and that's not even Modern.
Yeah. So let's talk about a little bit about each of the paper formats. I mean, we talked about Modern a little bit. As you said, the season is kind of shifting to a different format.
I heard Ponder was unbanned.
Yeah, well, unrestricted.
Unrestricted. And yes. What, Legacy?
Vintage?
Good. I'm building a Vintage deck. I'm doing Affinity.
Was it? Yeah, unrestricted Vintage.
It scares me that it's $18,000 for a deck, but my plan is to build it slowly.
I mean, very, very slowly.
Yeah.
If you hear the squeaking in the background.
I don't.
Okay, that's my dog with a squeaky toy. She's bored.
That's cool.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about Modern. I mean, I guess we did talk about it a bit already. I'm just curious to see how the metagame is going to shift around it, around these bans.
Sure.
Or I guess a single ban. But yeah, you said your store is focusing on Standard now?
Yeah.
Do you have an RCQ coming up? I guess you. Are you planning on going to an RCQ, or do you know of one coming up?
No. I want to find one so I can go to it, and I'll request off so I can go to it. Or if we hold it, I'll just request off on that day so I can attend it. But I definitely want to go this year. I want to try and get my entry spot. You know what I'm saying? I want to win my ticket. So I'm going to do what it takes, and I'm already hardcore. We're going to talk a little bit later about what I'm running in Standard a little bit later.
We can go over it now.
Can you go over now? I got a few cards in front of me because I just picked out a few of the heavy hitters that are in it. So what's funny is they came out with this card, and I know, all puns aside here, it's called Cryptic Coat. Okay? It's two other, one blue, artifact equipment. And whenever this comes into battlefield, the top, you know, cloak the top card of your library, then attach Cryptic Coat to it. And what you're essentially doing is you're taking the top card of your library and you're exiling it, and you're making a 2/2 creature with Ward 2 temporarily. if the card happens to have like a creature underneath it, if it's a creature, you can pay the cost later. I think it's the casting cost of the card and flip it over or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter with this deck. It's not really important. The important part is the other stuff. Equipped creature gets +1/+0 and can't be blocked. And then the bottom has a really silly ruling that one blue, one other, return cryptic coat to its owner's hand. This, of course, if it gets taken away from me or exiled or something, I can do that in response. But there's other things in the deck that way benefit cryptic coat more than it does itself. And what I mean by that is the next card here is called Planar Incision. I've been playing around with Planar Incision for a while, and I really didn't like it because when I use it as a defensive card, it'll exile the opponent's creature, put it back in the battlefield, not attacking anymore, but with a 1-1 counter. And then later I can do like a Fading Hope and get it out of the battlefield, right? But you are using a lot of resources to like return a creature to the owner's hand so it doesn't damage you as a blue player, because there isn't really a lot of removal. But as you go along through the deck, you're going to see there's a pattern. The next card is called the Reality Chip. And I've been knowing about the power level of the Reality Chip for a while. And if you notice on Cryptic Coat, it's an artifact equipment. And the Reality Chip is a legendary artifact creature, equipment, jellyfish.
Yeah, that's a long title.
I know, but they're both blue and they're both artifacts. And funny that they're both blue and they're both artifacts, because there's another card here called the Enigma Jewel, which came out in the Lost Caverns of Ixalan. This card gets passed up so much, especially in a limited environment, right? Nobody wants to play test with this card either, because it doesn't really look like it's going to benefit you. I've broken it, dude. So look, it's a legendary artifact. It costs one blue. It comes into play tapped. You can tap it, add two colorless mana to your mana pool to activate abilities only. At any time, if you got the cojones to pay nine, which is one blue and eight other, you can craft this with four other non-lands with activated abilities. And that's the important part. And the cool thing is, Onik, you don't have to have them on your field. You can have them in the graveyard.
Yeah.
Okay? I didn't know this until I played test with it in Arena. Going along with the deck, too, you got Collector's Vault. I only used two of those because I went heavy at first with four, and then I was like, three's too much. Two seems like the sweet spot. Omen Hawker, because you can tap it to add blue and colorless only to activate abilities. But notice we're only trying to use the mana to activate abilities, right? You got Fading Hope, you got Spell Pierce, you got Impulse, you got Oaken Siren, which is the same thing. Tap blue, add blue to your mana pool, spend only to either cast an artifact or activate an ability of an artifact. What abilities are we activating? What we're really doing is we're activating the Reality Chip's abilities to reconfigure, because it costs a lot. It costs one blue and three other. And believe it or not, man, early game, that's really hard to even, it's a hard jagged pill to swallow. So it's really a mid game to late game move. And a lot of this you're just using to set up. I mean, there's a lot of filler in the deck, like Essence Capture, Impulse, Geist Wave, I've mentioned in the past, you know, cards like that. But artifacts can tap. There's another one too, the Gadgeteer. And I forget the other guy too that makes them cost less. So what you're doing is when you play an artifact, you get a clue token for free when you play the artifact. And there's another one where you can copy the artifact when you play it. You pay three and you can copy the artifact. So it's kind of like that one mythic artifact that costs five or four. And then you pay, you know what I'm talking about, the one from Kaldheim or whatever it was. The mythic artifact is a big pillar.
From Kaldheim?
I forget. They're in that era. At any rate, it's really cool, the synergy, but the problem with the deck is it runs through the cards real quick because of the Reality Chip and the fact that everything's so cheap. The only cost you're going to have is the blue pip, and it's usually you're playing off the top of your deck. When you hit a basic land, which is the only thing that's going to stop you, then you're going to have to like return the Cryptic Coat back to your hand and put it back down again to get that top card down as 3/2 unblockable creature.
That makes sense.
Yeah, the only important thing is, too, as you're playing, too, is on the tempo, you don't really have good evasion. You have unblockable, right? And you're always swinging with three.
I mean, I think unblockable is like the best evasion.
Right. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they kind of sweat and they kind of scoop early on Arena. I'm not going to lie, man. I've been having a lot of fun with it. And the important part, again, I just want to stress this, is if anybody wants to play test with this and have fun with it like me, just remember that you have to get those 3/2 unblockables in. So you don't want to use those as blockers or whatever. You're going to have little 2/2 ward creatures everywhere. I mean, you're going to have a full board, dude. Playing it in real life, I probably got 20 tokens, and that's not enough. I'm still using dice on the side. I'm just saying. It's really funny when I bring it up to the FNM for Friday Night Standard, the players are like, that looks fun. And then you have everybody just standing around me. I love playing with decks that are outside the meta. You know what I'm saying?
I want a copy of this deck list because every card that you mentioned, except for that Kaldheim, whatever one, yeah. I looked it up because I didn't really know what it was. And everything is either says like, it's either a blue artifact, have yeah. activated abilities. Like everything feels like it does interconnect one it way or
does.
Another.
It does. I don't have it.
And it looks perfectly. Pretty, it looks pretty crazy.
It does.
I mean, I don't need this deck list right now. I can send it to me like tomorrow or a couple days.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I can't wait till I do find the perfect balance of it because I'm just going through the cards so quick. My dad just left to go back to St. Louis. He surprised visit me about a month ago. And even him and me, man, at nighttime when I get off work, I come home and I jump on Arena immediately. And we just laugh together till we both fall asleep that I just win so many games. It's just funny. He's like, what you need to do, man? And this is my dad talking, right? You need to build this deck, sell a bunch of copies of it. I'm like, dude, the cards are like 80 cents.
Yeah. That does look interesting. That sounds, I mean, I'm not looking at anything, but it sounds really interesting. My LGS Fire and Dice here in the LA area, they have an RCQ coming up this weekend for Standard, of course. And a buddy of mine, he's got a Esper Control list that he wants to pilot. He showed me the deck list. I mean, it looks pretty solid. I played my cube on Sunday, and he was just missing one card, which is the black white slow land, you know, and just taps unless you have two or more lands. So I let him borrow the one from my cube because I'm not gonna play it next week.
Sure.
So yeah, hopefully he'll get in there and get some wins. I think the event's gonna cap at like 64 players. So it's a big deal event, and I think it's gets you to Dallas. There's an event in Dallas coming up.
There's events all over the place, dude.
Yeah, but I think the RCQ, that if you wins that, or the winner or top two or whatever, they go to Dallas for a future event. Nice. I think you're winning. You're playing for that event.
Yeah, because the people who played the last RCQ went to Chicago, so it makes sense.
Yeah,
it makes sense. It's just hard to deviate from mono blue, you know, especially when I know there's a challenge. So I see the mono blue is not really all that strong in Standard. It really isn't, unless you're going to go like a proliferate poison route or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't see it viable in Standard. So for me to make this build and make it work, and it's just hilarious how it's coming out, you know. It reminds me a long time ago, I think it was like 3 years ago, I built a red, white, and blue deck in Standard that all it did was draw cards. That's all it did. And it's like, well, what's your win count? It's like, oh, it's going to mill my opponent, you know, for all the cards I draw.
I want to test out this deck that I saw the other day for Standard as well. It's a Sultai control deck.
Nice.
And this was also at MagicCon Chicago in a 75K open that it seemingly came out of nowhere because I'm looking at like the top. I'm looking at like, was it 60, 50, 60 decks or so?
Yeah.
And I don't see any other copies of Sultai Control. It's
just that one.
Yeah. It basically came out of nowhere.
Sure.
I haven't really had a chance to export the second to Arena and try it out, but it looks like it just... Do you remember those Capenna, I guess, fetch lands? Like,
the Triomes?
Yeah, I mean, not the Triomes, not the one that has the basic land types, but the ones that go get you a basic card. Like, when it enters the battlefield, sacrifice it when you do search your library for an A, B, or C land card.
Yeah. I remember that because it was really heavy on the... You had to pick three colors in that set while drafting or whatever. Yeah, I remember that.
So this deck runs, I think, was this 1, 2, 3? So 12 copies of those. It runs the new card from Murders of Carlo Manor, Aftermath Analysis. So when it enters the battlefield, mill 3 cards, and then pay like 4 mana, sacrifice it, return all land cards from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. Is running 4 copies of Nissa, Resurgent Animist.
Of course.
That has a landfall ability. This is the one from that Aftermath product. This is the only good card in that thing. Maybe like another one or two. It says landfall whenever a land enters the battlefield under control, add 1 mana of any color. Then if this is the second time this ability has resolved this turn, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal an elf or elemental card, put it in your hand, or rest on the bottom of your library in any order. Aftermath Analysis, which is the one that I mentioned that returns all lands back, is an elf. It's an elf detective. Then it runs Slogurk, or Slogurk, the Overslime. This is 1 green-blue, a legendary creature, Ooze, from Midnight Hunt. It's a 3/3 creature to trample whenever a land is put into your graveyard from anywhere. Put a +1/+1 counter on Overslime. Remove 3 counters on it, return to the owner's hand. Whenever it leaves the battlefield, return up to 3 target land cards from your graveyard to your hand. Like, this is your win condition. You're basically casting this thing out, finding a bunch of ways to put lands in your graveyard, bring them all back, let this thing grow to massive proportions, and just swing with this gross thing. Like, this deck looks a ton of fun. It's got, you know, your control, like Cut Down, Go for the Throat, Path of Peril, of course. It also runs 3 copies of Splendid Reclamation, which is a reprint, but it's in Midnight Hunt or Crimson Vow, one or the other. Return all land cards from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. So even if you don't get it through Aftermath Analysis, you'll find another way. You'll get all your lands back with this one. Terror Tide, which is the board wipe from Ixalan that has Fathomless Descent. And if you remember, Descent is, it counts the permanent cards in your graveyard. So if you have a ton of lands in there, all creatures get -X/-X until end of turn, where X is the number of permanent cards in your graveyard. So for 4 mana, this could give like -13/-13. Like, this deck has 36 lands in a 60 card deck.
Reminds me of that Death Shadow thing, you know?
In what way?
The -13/13 part?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I just picked 13/13 just as an example. I don't know why I went with
I got you.
That number. But it runs, of course, a couple of copies of Jace, Perfected Mind, which I think you're targeting yourself to mill some stuff. Runs Celestis.
There's a lot of that, though.
For sure.
There's a lot of that where you want to do self-mill, and I'm like, that's not the route I want to go.
you want to mill it by your own way, not you're doing it yourself.
Yeah.
It's no fun when you mill yourself. I'm going to do it to you.
And that's what I'm saying. So I'm like, well, I'm definitely not going the mill route, you know, and that's really hard because WotC never really wants to push a competitive mill. And it's like they messed up with the whole rogue thing and then the crab, you know, again. But
they get really close to it. They give you the pieces that don't fit all that well together, but people it's like a jigsaw puzzle that has like 100 pieces, but they only really give you 95. So you spend forever trying to put it together, but you're like, this isn't working.
Yeah, it feels like a Resident Evil puzzle or something, you know?
Or like you get something from IKEA and you just get the wrong size screws and bolts. You're like, bro, I don't know how I'm ever going to build this desk.
Yeah, did they give me extra screws and bolts? Or
or like a Phillips screwdriver when you need like a hexagon wrench or something. Like, bro, this isn't working.
Speaking of not working.
What?
Speaking of not working, the spell slinger thing. Whatever.
Oh, yeah. So I've never downloaded this app before.
It's funny.
I've heard of it.
In the past.
Have you played it?
Well, in the past, on the podcast, Austin DeCeter was a co-host at one point, and he was promoting that game like crazy. Almost every episode, man. He's like, oh, yeah, man. And I'm like, I gave it a try, and I stopped it. And then later on, I kept seeing advertisements, like even on TV, dude. I was like, oh, maybe they've got it better. And I went back on, and I'm like, no, it's the same. And it's just like a match three puzzle game, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I think it is. Actually, no, sorry. I didn't mean to agree with you. I just, like, I think it's a puzzle game of some sort. I just don't know if it's like a matching thing or whatever.
So how it was is it was like there's a full board and they're all mixed up colors. If you match three, it would give you mana of that color. And then, like, it didn't matter if you got a green deck, you'd have to do green and white. You know, it would give you another color because even though you pick your main color, it gives you a secondary color because the board can't be just your color, you know. And then it also had planeswalker symbols. So he can do one of his planeswalker abilities if he got that mana built up for the planeswalker symbol. I thought that part was cool because it kind of matched Magic the Gathering. But other than that, man, it was more or less a thing of who's putting down what quicker, you know, is really what it boils down to. I mean, there's a little bit of strategy. I'll upgrade this guy to a 4/4, or I'll do 2 damage directly over here. But the majority of it was you're just doing match three over here. You can look at games like Jeweled. You know, they're all over the app stores, you know, even free versions or whatever.
So what we're getting at, like, if this sounds cool to you, don't.
It's over.
Yeah, they are sunsetting this app, this game. They've announced like a couple of days ago, maybe like a week or two ago at this point, that June 4th, the game is going to go offline.
So I'm surprised they're going to keep it up that long.
Yeah, I mean, I think for people to get like one last game in or something with, however, if you could play with friends or whatever. But the in-app purchases has been turned off. And so you get like 3 months to just, you know, play a couple more games until it's gone for good. This app was around for about 4 years, maybe a little bit over 4 years at this point. I'm not so sure. Like, some people have speculated that, like, oh, they have to shut it down because, like, they terminated the people at Hasbro or Wizards of the Coast that worked on this thing. I don't think that's the case, because those layoffs happened in, like, December, and I feel like they would have already shut down at this point. But it's just, I guess, not profitable enough. It's just, you know, resources going into something that's not really being productive. Which is unfortunate because I did have a few people. I read that some people actually played it in their downtime because like their phone can't really handle Arena enough, but it could handle this pretty well.
Yeah, it was weird. They had a game a long time ago called Valor's Reach, and then they crossed over like a Diablo style or something. And
I think it's the same thing. Like what I was reading, I think Valor's Reach initially it debuted as Valor's Reach.
Yeah,
and then at some point it became Magic Spellslingers.
That's it. Yeah. But there was another one that was Diablo style though. And
that one. That like
it got shut down as soon as it started.
That was like didn't really get birth to that. They aborted that real quick.
one of my friends Twitch streams and he decided to do that in the middle of his stuff and I'm like, "Are you sure, bro?" And he goes, "Yeah, man, it's fun." And I was supporting him. I was there in his streams. Or the Twitch streams and stuff. You know, if I wasn't streaming, I'd be in his watching him or whatever. If you're editing podcasts, you can have whatever in the background. It doesn't matter. And support my friends. And like Peddler, man, I would watch him every once in a while too. Or joke that I would put it on play and just let it loop and go to bed at night. And I really did. But to see him play that game, it hurt me because it's like, dude, this game's not going anywhere, bro. You know? And I really had high hopes for it because graphically it looked real good, but there was no execution as far as depth or anything. It was almost like a kid's game that you give a kid a tablet that's got like the protector around it, you know? You know what I'm talking about? Like they drop the tablet or whatever. This is a game that's supposed to go on there for a kid, not an adult that's spending money, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I never played it. I never really had interest in downloading it.
Everybody's opinion's going to differ. So
yeah. So hopefully, I don't know. Well, if you have the game, I'm sure there was an in-app pop-up that said, "Hey, see you later." You know. But so it's unfortunate for those who played, or if you haven't touched yours in a while, then well, I guess
I'm sure it was heartfelt. Really like you know, we appreciate all you players, and we hope you continue playing it until our date of June, whatever.
Yeah.
Just know that there won't be any more. They probably shut down in-app purchases, right?
They did already as of like a couple days ago.
That's cute.
I think maybe as like as soon as they announced it, they just kind of turned off the in-app purchases.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week's show. Onique, I'm really looking forward to next week's episode, man. There's going to be talk about, what, Modern Horizons 3, Thunder Junction, a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, the future of Magic is coming out.
The future of Magic. Yeah. Yeah. Seems like a never-ending thing, man. Here I'm at work, you know, and I know I still was going to go, but, you know, this is going to be extra for the listeners. And Fallout comes out, right? And everybody for the last month or two has been asking me about Fallout pre-sales. And I'm told from the management and stuff that we don't know anything yet. So last minute, man, hey, we're getting this, we're getting that, we're getting this, we're getting that. And the Wizards cut us down. I'm like, what do you mean? So we got to go to these meetings every Wednesday, right? Every Wednesday I go to this mandatory meeting. And they're like, hey, this week Wizard of the Coast dropped our allotment. And I'm like, wait, what? Because I've been selling like a madman. And our allotment goes off our sales. And I'm like, man, I'm selling like a madman. That shouldn't be the case. And they're like, no, dude, it's nationwide. So apparently stores only got a certain allotment. Like, I'll give you an example. One other store owner, he'll come in and he'll work out a deal with me because I work the front of the house, you know. And he'll work out a deal where he'll take a couple $1,000s worth of stuff. And on one of my days off, or I'll go in early or something, go to his store, and I'll get a couple $1,000s worth of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And he comes in. He goes, man, you got any extra Fallout? I'm like, what you see is what I got. And he goes, they gave me the same, dude. And we're talking six of each deck. There was four decks. And then six boxes of collector. Now, luckily, we have another store, another location. And we can hook them up whenever they need some little bits in that. But we're about sold out already. And I heard almost everybody's sold out. What are they selling for over in your neck of the woods?
You're asking me about Commander stuff, so I have no idea. Like, I yeah. Like when I play Cube, I mean, when I play Cube on over the weekend, like, there was a group of next to us who I think the three of them each bought a different Fallout Commander. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the price is, I don't know if it was inflated or not. Yeah. I'm not sure,
okay,
but I know they're available and they were playing and they were enjoying themselves. But as far as pricing, I have no idea what it is. I didn't even know what a regular Commander deck sells for.
We're selling them for $40 a pack where I'm at. And I think
for 44
a pack collector of booster? Fallout. Yeah, for a collector booster of Fallout.
Okay. Yeah, anyway. Some places I hear 35, some places I hear 40. Now that you mentioned it, I saw some people, I guess, complaining about it.
Yeah.
Because whatever. But
I'll tell you another thing. I read an article. Because I was even thrown back by it's $40. What? You know, not 30 or 25 or 27, not 35, but 40. So anyway, my dad plays Fallout a lot, you know, and he's up there in age. He's about like 70 or something. And I was thinking about just being cute and giving him a pack. And I'm like, not for that price. You know, for him to stare at a pack and go, oh, that's cool. I never thought that'd be a thing, man. Magic. And, you know, and he's not a Magic player. So he'd probably keep it sealed kind of thing. And for him to get that pack, just a waste of money for my account and his account.
Yeah, just ask people for the bulk.
and then I'm seeing everybody play with these decks. They're having fun. Even the whole RAD system is better than I thought because they're really using that to their advantage in that synergy, you know?
Yeah.
And, I'm seeing everybody have fun with it, but at $40 a pack. I just can't do it, man. I can't justify it. So I'm reading an article.
I mean, it is a collector booster.
Yeah, I
it's
did.
Not, read... It's not like a set or play booster or whatever.
It is a collector booster. It is a collector booster.
Yeah.
I did read an article before I went to work. It's the first day of selling it, man. I think it was a Wednesday. I could be wrong, maybe a Thursday. But it was the 8th, okay? So the 8th, I woke up, had a cup of coffee. I'm in my apartment, and I work like 2 minutes away. You know? So I'm having this cup of coffee, and I read an article where it said you can open a God pack. And I'm like, what? And it says it'd be all rares or whatever. So an employee at work bought a pack. I'm not going to name names because I didn't get permission, right? So I'll ask later on, and I'll be like, hey, I mentioned it on the podcast, but I didn't say your name, you know. And the employee bought one pack, Monique, and sure enough, it was a God pack. Every card in the pack, except for two. Two of them were uncommon. The rest of them were rare or mythic rare.
Is it like 14 in a pack or something?
I think there's 15 cards to the pack.
Okay.
So 13 were rare or mythic. I'm talking Tormagoyf with the Pip-Boy image with the stats on it and stuff. They have a different name for it, but it's Tormagoyf. They got the subtext underneath it, right? And then they pulled a bunch of other cool stuff, dude. Let me just put it that way. You know, a bunch of rares and mythic rares.
Yeah, like, I don't, like, then again, I don't know the general content. Like, if you're just buying a regular collector booster from, like, a standard expansion product, it has commons, uncommons, foils here and there, whatever. But with Fallout, it's... Come on, dog. Dog is, like, on my lap now. And she's not a small dog. She's a silver lab. Collector boosters for Fallout, to me, I would imagine they'd just be a bit higher rarity in general, like less commons, more rares, but still 13 out of 15 rares is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I know, right? Hey, they were stoked, man. They were stoked.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to do it for this week, guys. We appreciate you guys tuning in this week, and you know, tune in next week because there's going to be a lot of juicy tidbits coming up, plus that hard-to-find news. And we hope that we are your first source of Magic the Gathering news. And if you like what you hear, please give us a follow over at patreon.com/thecrypticcommander. And until next time, keep spell slinging.